You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Welcome on Monday. The house that Mac built. Speaking of the house that Ruth built. Yankee Stadium tonight. Yeah, the Yankees and the Red Sox get it on. In the Bronx. I love that shit. Thunderdome. Yeah. Thunderdome's awesome. Saw a little bit of it in Atlanta last night. Pretty exciting game between the Braves and the Dodgers. I thought the Dodgers were going to get them at the end. They didn't get it done, though. So, let's see. The Braves, that series continues today. I think there's three games today. So if you're, again, baseball fan, heaven, playoffs. Braves continue to face elimination. The Yankees and the Red Sox are at 1-1, and Cleveland's got to get off the mat and see if they can win a game in that series. So if you're a baseball fan, good stuff. So anyway, good Monday morning, the eighth day of October here in the year 2018. Hope you're having a good day so far, wherever you are. I, over the weekend, I went to watch Sunday morning television, right? And, you know, back in the day, you used to be able to turn on Tim Russert. And no matter what persuasion you were, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, Tim Russert had a way of moderating Meet the Press, and it didn't alienate you. It was articulate discussions with people, both liberal and conservative, and he always brought it back to the center. He always made it respectable and articulate. And so, you know, where do you go in the storm, right? You look for stable things. Lighthouses. Okay, and so Tim Russert was that in terms of journalism. So I thought, well, you know, who would I watch Sunday morning? Exactly. Cricket. Who would I watch that's Tim Russert-esque? And the answer is nobody. You know, maybe the guy on CBS kind of steers middle ground. Certainly not Chuck Todd, who now moderates Meet the Press. So I didn't watch anything. I would have liked to, but I didn't watch anything. Saw something written by a guy named Jim Van De Hee on a website called Axios. It's called America the Radicalized. And I'll just read you a couple of paragraphs. It's going to get worse. Virtually every major American institution is being radicalized or being reshaped by the radicalization of our public views. You see it most vividly in politics, where the White House and Congress have often cause and effect on the radicalization. Thanks to the Kavanaugh fight and the Merrick Garland shenanigans before it, where the Republicans would not hold a hearing for him before the election, there are three new fair game realities. One, the parties feel free to delay nominations a year plus if necessary. Two, high school actions are fair game. That's a reference to evidently Brett Kavanaugh threw ice during a some kind of altercation in a bar, which doesn't make him a fighter, right? Makes him kind of a sissy, I'm not going to lie to you. I heard that, I was like, what? He threw ice? Come on, you're supposed to be in there, man. Three partisan line votes for the Supreme Court are fine. There used to be a day when somebody like Brett Kavanaugh would be confirmed 93-90, 97-0. Okay, because he was qualified, and that's the way they did it. Now it's, do I agree with his politics? Do I agree with the direction the court is going to be sent? And the answer to that obviously falls largely along party lines. And then a third bullet in the article says, watch for court fights to surpass congressional races in terms of partisanship. You see this in traditional media, where the cable news networks are racking up record ratings around the sideshow of politics. Reporters who previously kept their personal views private suddenly pick sides on Twitter. Now remember, reporters, special people, we're not talking about quote-unquote correspondents, whatever that hybrid term is, we're talking about reporters. Right. Since the presidential election, reporters on both sides of the political aisle and from markets big and small have shown less restraint on social media when it comes to their personal political viewpoints. That heretofore was a no-no. In this past week, a Minnesota journalist was fired from a local NBC station for wearing a Make America Great Again hat while covering a Trump rally in the one in Minneapolis, St. Paul. A longtime Palm Springs anchor was forced to resign after defending Kavanaugh from sexual assault allegations. The New York Times conceded it made a mistake when it ran a news story about the Kavanaugh bar fight at Yale, which was co-bylined by a writer who had tweeted her disapproval of the nomination. Again, New York Times, and again, people said, look, her position on him was trumpeted loudly. Yet the New York Times saw fit to go forward with it, or to even include her in a discussion of him after she had stated that. Since Trump was elected, by our colleague Sarah Fisher's count, nearly a dozen reporters have either been fired or lost their jobs for incendiary social media posts, most all of them over politically charged subject. You see this on social media. Do I need to even amplify that? I won't. And then you also see it in the way tragedy is radicalized, right? School shooting goes to school safety? No. Guns. Exactly. I was thinking about school shootings last week. any kind of fire or storms, right, go straight to climate change discussion. Even the normal, right, episodic TV, sports, right, our escape into entertainment all comes back to this shrill debate, right? Roseanne, episodic TV, the whole kneeling thing with the NFL, and you got every major award show that happens is a virtual celebrity bashing event. So, why am I telling you all this? Here's the conclusion of the article. The conclusion says, be smart. All the incentives on social media and in politics favor the radical. If you want clicks, viewers, donors, followers, retweets, or votes, there's no market for moderation or the middle. Radical rules, as in radical decides. You might not have started the fire, but you're surely living in it. So I just thought it was an interesting kind of commentary on where we are in a stance of politics and the media and social media that has been dumped onto that which was relatively stable, and then social media opens up and dumps gasoline on everything. So that got me, so I'm thinking, and then I don't know what made me look at Facebook on Sunday. So I looked at Facebook Sunday, and like I'm seeing stuff from people that, you know, I don't know about you, but like some people will friend me, and I'm like, well, they're a friend of a friend. I don't really want to make them angry, so I friend them. So then I'm looking at like the feed, which I don't really, I don't look at. So I'm just looking at stuff, and I'm like, why on Facebook, you know, you see people post the craziest, first of all, they post the craziest stuff. But one of the things I learned was how to not unfriend somebody, although I did that. I went through all my Facebook friends, and people I didn't know, like I saw the name, I didn't know them. It was me essentially not wanting to make them mad by not friending them. I deleted them. And then anybody that posted, like, I don't want to look and have somebody's political, you know, thoughts. And so you do something that's called unfollowing on Facebook. Yeah. You unfollow people, which means you're not going to see things that they put out. I thought, well, I didn't even know what unfollow was. I did it. And then what happened was, like, all the people that post political stuff, like, that all of a sudden cleared out. And what did I see? I saw all kinds of other cool stuff. I saw all kinds of other, like, stuff that my friends, like, posted. I'm like, whoa, how about that? How about that? Ken Rogers posts a beautiful picture of Idaho. So I guess I would, so I cleaned that out, right? And I went through, and I have friends from high school, you know, one guy in particular who posts like needless to say, he's no longer part of the McNamara news feed, but it's just like everywhere, right? It's everywhere. And I'm intellectually curious. I like to read, and I like to read from both sides. But, you know, as I always say, where are the adults? Where are the adults? And let me just tell you somebody who I thought behaved like incredibly like an adult throughout the last week, and that is Susan Collins of Maine. The country is in the throes of this Me Too. If somebody accuses you of sexual assault, right? In our country, we struggle with all kinds of different reporting on all kinds of different, dare I say, issues or certain types of crimes or. And one of them is sexual assault. Another one is domestic violence. So you see these things, and you're trying to get people to report. So what you want to do is you don't want to drag them through the street. You want to encourage reporting, because it's a good and right thing to do. Yes,
yes,
without a doubt, it's a good and right thing to do. So then what happens? So if it is the good and right thing to do, then what happens? So, well, then it butts up against the legal system, and there is a burden of proof. Yes. And so I thought Susan Collins got, and she's obviously a woman, right? So she is in the crosshairs of all of this, right? Hearing things like, you're going to put a rapist on the Supreme Court. And I thought her speech in front of the Senate about her vote was outstanding, an outstanding piece of, you know, I don't even, what would you call it? Leadership. But again, it just marvels me, and the piece says it, radical wins, right? The most shrill, the craziest, the most over the top gets you the most reactions, gets you the most retweets, gets you all that. So, where does it go? How does it end? I mean, how do you get through the day with this stuff constantly bombarding you? I'd say the answer is to shut it off. Is to shut it off. And to tune into All Marine Radio and listen. For inspiration, a little bit of humor, maybe a lot of humor, and just, I think, some sensible talk. Now, I'm not a liberal, but I do respect liberal ideas, and I do respect articulate discussion. But again, the problem I personally had with the whole thing was, you know, most people that go through trauma can never forget, right? And so I was troubled by the fact that Brett Kavanaugh's accuser couldn't remember virtually any of the details. And so when you have the Me Too movement butting up against the scales of justice, something has to corroborate, there has to be evidence, and then when there is none, right? The presumption of innocence as an American is the standard. And it just, so when you look at that and you look at, you know, the FBI has investigated him now 7 times, or it might be 8 with the last one. When you hear people screaming, right? Screaming that, doesn't it occur to them that maybe she's wrong? Certainly, if there was any credibility to it, Dianne Feinstein would have ran it out in July or August. She wouldn't have waited till after hearing. So anyway, I don't know. It just, where do you go for grown-up discussion, right? Where do you go? Good question, right? Good question. So, if you have any recommendations other than All Marine Radio, let me know. I would encourage you. Unfriend. No, not unfriend. You could unfriend. They might get mad at you, though. Unfollow on Facebook. And it essentially it blows them out of your news feed. You'll still be friends. They'll never know that you're not seeing what they post. But it's just, you know, the constant bombardment. If you look in those feeds, yikes. Also, I posted on Twitter an interesting article over the weekend. And it's written by a guy named Stephen Mosier, who writes for the New York Post. Stephen Mosier has done research in China. He is, I could read it, I could get his bio out. He was teaching at Stanford, or on the staff at Stanford, when China said yeah to Stanford, who wanted to do, you know, have a broader relationship in China, blah, blah, blah. And the Chinese said, hey, you have to fire him, though. And so what do you think Stanford did? Educational Institute, they're about openness and articulate discourse and learning. They fired him. Right? The headline, though, is Trump has China quaking in its boots. So I read it, and it's like, so headlines you don't see very often. He goes through and he talks about the effect that this trade war that we're having with the Chinese, that again, I would tell you is long overdue, right? America finally stands up on its hind legs, as Grant Newsom said. He goes on to say, let's read between the Chinese tea leaves. In early July, Xi, that's President Xi, or Chairman Xi, whatever we're calling him these days, ordered state media outlets to tone down the rhetoric. Quote, self-deception and boasting will not bring about true self-confidence and pride, the official Communist Party newspaper dutifully editorialized. The sudden modesty was a striking turnabout from the 5 years of constant bragging by none other than the core leader Xi himself. Almost from the moment he took power in 2012, the Chinese leader was so confident that his own country's rise was unstoppable and so certain that America was in terminal decline that he openly boasted about the Chinese-dominated world to come. He even drew up a grandiose timeline. China would dominate high-tech by 2025, the Asia-Pacific region by 2035, and the world by 2049. She may try to blame his propaganda flax for overdoing it a bit, but the Chinese people know who is responsible. President Xi is, as the Chinese say, slapping his own face. And then the article goes on. After all, the masses must be told who to blame for China's recent economic difficulties. The official Global Times has even published an article calling for U.S. administration officials to invoke the 25th Amendment and remove Trump from office. In private, however, senior Chinese officials have come to view Trump as a Sun Tzu-like strategic genius. Yes, you heard me right. After the election, Xi Jinping tried to rope Europeans and other Asian countries into a new anti-U.S. coalition, only to see this initiative fail. The EU recoiled from Xi's embrace and is now in serious free and fair trade talks with Washington. Even the Philippines, which Xi tried desperately to woo with the promise of billions in investment, has now backed away from China. But Xi was stumbling. But as Xi was stumbling, Trump went on the offensive. He signed a new trade agreement with South Korea and expanded defense cooperation with Japan and Australia. Using the threat of tariffs as leverage, he even got Xi to agree to UN sanctions against North Korea, stifling the economy of China's only formal ally. This week, with the successful renegotiation of trade agreements with Mexico and Canada, Trump is now able to control China's access to the entire North American market. Beijing now realizes, even if many in the U.S. foreign policy establishment don't, that they are facing a master tactician, one who is moving steadily from deal to deal, getting as many concessions as he can, and then moving on to the next. But they also see Trump as not just a transactional but strategic leader. He is pressuring China not just on the economic front, but on the military and ideological front as well. They fear that his goal is not just to rectify the trade deficit, but to eliminate the threat that a rising China poses to the United States. He goes on, the Chinese have been set on their heels by an American adversary who quotes Sun Tzu, the supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. The art of war has met the art of the deal, and the art of the deal is won. Only the terms of surrender remain to be negotiated. China is eager to resume talks, but, as Trump said last week, he is in no hurry to reach such a deal. I'm pretty sure he means that China is not sufficiently subdued. Stephen Mosier. Yeah, you find him in the New York Times. He's written a book called Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream in the New Threat is a New Threat to the World Order. And again, I have to thank Grant Newsham. I mean, Grant Newsham has come on this program, and he'll be on, I think, tomorrow. Has made me smart about in a way about Asia that I had never spent that much time on it. And so I have him specifically to thank for my education. Let me just tell you about Stephen Mosier. What is he, some right-wing wacko? In 1970, he's a white guy, and as you might tell by his name. In 1979, this is written in the first person, I became the first American social scientist allowed to do research in the People's Republic of China, where I documented the collapse of the commune system, the massive human rights abuses of the Mao years, and personally witnessed the forcible abortion and sterilization of women under the newly announced one-child policy. The experience aroused me out of the academic slumber and led me to embark on a career of writing and lecturing. The happy result has been the dozen books that are listed here, interspersed with public appearances in all 50 states and several dozen foreign countries, and opportunities to work with both the White House and Congress on China policy. The books range from A Mother's Ordeal, in which I tell the story of a woman's fight to save her second and illegal child from the population control police who are determined to abort her, to China's Attacks, a technological thriller in the a la Tom Clancy mode of an attempted Chinese invasion of Taiwan. My latest is called The Bully of Asia and deals with China's efforts to overturn the current U.S.-led world order and replace it with one dominated by China. In a world bristling with dangers, only one enemy truly poses a mortal challenge to the United States and the peaceful and prosperous world that America guarantees. That enemy is China. So, I would recommend it. This is an interesting article by a guy who's been studying China for a long, long time. So, Stephen Mosier. I found that interesting. The talked about the Major League Baseball players. I have an article that I mentioned last week, but it's one of those like statistical articles by a researcher that I'll share just the conclusion. I'm trying to get the authors of the study on. They're both military people. And then I'll read you the conclusion. Then we'll actually open the show. Yeah, how about that? But as you can see, here it is. The study's called Suicide Rates Among Active Duty Service Members Compare with Civilian Counterparts, 2005 to 2014. It's written by Carolyn A. Ryman, Medical Corps, United States Navy, and Edward L. Mazuchowski, Medical Corps, United States Air Force. So I'm trying to get either one of them to come on. Big headline 2 weeks ago. Military rate, younger military active duty people up 10%. Okay, so what does that mean? Is that higher than, any increase is horrible? Yeah, but we're trying to footnote the increase, okay? We're trying to understand it. So is that higher than the population? The general population? Did it rise a similar amount over the same period of time? So here's a conclusion that they reach, okay? Suicide rates among U.S. active duty service members. Now, mind you, active duty, we're not talking about 20 veterans, okay? And active duty are included in the 20 veterans, by the way. And the number's not 22, it's 20. suicide rates among U.S. active duty service members were found to increase between 2005 and 2009 and remain relatively stable between 2009 and 2014. However, total active component DOD suicide rates, after adjusting for age and sex, have been either lower to or comparable with civilian rates between the years of 2005 to 2014. Okay, see, that's the kind of stuff that, like, when people want to write an article, we talked about shrill earlier, right? Right? The loudest, the most shrill. Who's going to read this? Right? And if you're listening to this, you're like, holy shit, I've never heard that. Why not? Oh, because it's boring. It means you'd have to read footnotes, do some analysis. Adjust it for age, adjust it for gender, and then take a look at it. The conclusion goes on. When broken down by age, sex groups, an association was found between higher suicide incidents and active component military status among 17 to 29-year-old females in some years. Okay? So, I'll read that again. When broken down by age, sex groups, an association was found between higher suicide incidents and active component military status among 17 to 29-year-old females in some years. A second association was found between lower suicide incidents and active component military status among 25 to 49-year-old males in some years. And then, this is awesome, things you don't read very often. Both of these findings warrant further investigation. Spoken like an adult, right? That's what we found. We think there, we need to drill deeper into each one of these conclusions. So, interesting. So when you're tracking veteran suicide, if we don't pull that number apart, we are living the superficial life that America, the radicalized, celebrates. And that is the headline, no more than, I'd be curious, how many words should you write before America now clicks off? Two paragraphs? Maybe three? No more than 100 words? What do you think the guideline is? Okay, got to have a sexy picture. Got to have something that attracts your eyeball, and no more than 100 to 150 words. If you're going to do a video, it's got to be less than 3 minutes. Yeah, you can imagine how an hour-long segment of Allmarine Radio ranks down at the bottom. Substantive, yikes. Anyway. So just some thoughts on what did Thoreau say? The unexamined life is not worth living. Take some time, read, unfollow a whole bunch of people, right? If you're like me, I want to know about the cherry pie that my cousin made. Okay, that's what I want to know. I don't care about you getting your flamethrower out on somebody. I get enough of that in my life. So, all right. Bob Nielsen's going to join us. Pat Horan. You all have heard the story of Pat and Patty Horan. Pat, gunshot wound to the head. Prior enlisted guy. Goes back with he's a striker company. He's a platoon commander in a striker company. They get out in the vicinity of Mosul, and Pat got shot in the head. His wife is one of the most incredible people I've ever met. She engineered his recovery. Every brain injury is different. She went out and found the best places for him, given the damage that was done to his brain. And I had a chance to meet her via both of them, Pat and Patty. Pat's been on the show, as has Patty, talking about his road recovery. And so we had lunch, but they ran in the, I think, 10K yesterday, the Army 10K, I think. Bob Nielsen was down there, so we'll hear about that. I also posed a question that I want Bob to talk about, and that is, could we have won in Vietnam? And again, define winning. Winning, I would define, is the same thing that we're trying to do in Afghanistan, which is force a political settlement. Force a political settlement. Could we have done that in Vietnam? So we'll do that. And he doesn't know it yet, but we're going to also talk about post-traumatic winning. Nielsen's an example of post-traumatic winning. So good Monday morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official at 7:35 on the West Coast. Dedicated to the idea that articulate discussion, measured thought, thoughtful people should not be kicked to the curb in favor of the loudest, the most crazy people. I don't know how we find our way back to articulate discussion, but here's just to the idea that maybe that shouldn't be dead.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran, and you came home, and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You got to win.
/7:41 here on a Monday morning. Time to check the weather in Marineland. We'll do that. We'll check some news headlines. Currently in Quantico, clouds in 74. Camp Lejeune, partly sunny in 82. Granbury, Texas, clouds in 77. Big Timber, Montana, partly cloudy in 38. 29 Palms, sunny in 61. Pendleton, sun in 54. Whoa. Okinawa, dark, cloudy in 74. Okinawa's cooled off. In Afghanistan, they continue their cooling trend. In the central part of the Helmand province, 69 degrees under clear skies late in the day. And in the Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area, clouds in 63. Doesn't feel like 63. It feels warm enough. Currently on the way to 73 today, 72 on Tuesday, and 71 on Wednesday. All right, that's a look at your weather. We'll check a few stories right now. Most interesting story in Marineland. Marineland has been... relatively quiet of any kind of major upheaval lately. So, number one, Marines connect F-35 jet to HIMARS rocket shot for the first time. So the F-35 is supposedly a transformational aircraft, okay? This is from Lieutenant General Stephen Rudder, Deputy Commandant for Aviation. We were able to connect F-35 to HIMARS to a rocket shot, and we were able to target a particular CONEX box, Rudder told an audience Friday at an aviation readiness discussion at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. The shot was all done through a data link, according to Rudder. The F-35 used sensors and pushed data about the location of the target that was then fed to the HIMARS system. The HIMARS unit was then destroyed the target. It's all about sensor to shooter. So the HIMARS, right, acting as a data relay, so either lasering something and the data from the laser being digitally downloaded and not having to be communicated verbally. A little bit more streamlined. So F-35 hit a Connex box. Yeah. Connex box is actually kind of big. Let me tell you, the accuracy of ordnance these days, yikes. That's why you're seeing the ability to reduce the size of ordnance. We don't need 1,000-pound bombs anymore. You know, how much do we need to kill whatever we're trying to kill? Maybe if we're trying to knock a building down and the one next to it, we use 1,000-pound bombs. But We can use something much smaller that has a smaller bug splat, if you will, that doesn't create collateral damage because our accuracy is off the hook. Next headline. Has crisis improved the year after Navy and Marine Corps aviation crisis? You know, since we've been doing this show, the aviation community has been just in horrible conditions. Now, the headlines of the F-35 making its appearance, obviously, give us all cause for hope. But the numbers, have they changed? A year ago, Navy and Marine Corps squadrons reeled from a rising number of aviation-related mishaps. The Navy's mishap rate jumped 82% over the last 5 years. Marine Corps leapt 80%, largely driven by incidents involving Hornets and Super Hornet fighters. Although new numbers have yet to be released to the public, Lieutenant General Stephen Rudder mentioned in the previous article, the Marine Corps' new Deputy Commandant for Aviation said his Marines have their mishap count from the previous years. Vice Admiral DeWolf Bullet Miller III, the commander of Naval Air Forces, said his sailors did not. The hole's a little deeper than we thought, Miller told the audience at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. We didn't get in there overnight, and we're not getting out of it overnight. Miller goes on, we need to change some behaviors. We need what we're doing right now. The trends just continue to increase. So maintenance controls, our chief petty officer, we challenge them to get more involved in every single maintenance action, every single movement of an aircraft to be able to turn the tide. What does that mean? Does it mean they weren't paying attention? In the fiscal year that ended October 1, Rudder said Marine pilots boosted their flight hours from 13 per month to just over 17. That's not an insignificant number, okay? That's a big increase, and that's one of the things that Marine pilots said was really killing them, was they were not flying. Many reported somewhere between 5 and 10 hours per month. You know, most pilots would tell you that they've got to get somewhere between 15 to 20 to be what they would feel is current, right? And then, but between 20 and 25 to feel competent. Okay, current means I can take this thing up, I can take it down, I can do what I'm supposed to do. So I want to say that's probably between 10 and 15 hours a month, right? And then they, but if you want me to be effective with it, it's got to be between 20 and 25. So those numbers trending in the right direction. Here's a headline. We just need each other. These five charities were honored for their work to help veterans. Pretty cool. A new charity that pays for and helps organize reunion for combat veterans has received a $50,000 grant, the nation's the highest honor in this year's Newman's Own Awards competition. And you've heard him on All Marine Radio. The prevailing narrative about my veteran generation is wrong. We're not broken. We don't need to be fixed. We don't need over-engineered solutions. We just need each other, said Marine Corps veteran James Ferguson, founder of the Warrior Reunion Foundation in Cockeysville, Maryland, in accepting the award at the Pentagon on Friday. In just over a year, the foundation has provided 7 reunions to soldiers who deployed to combat together. The 8th reunion is scheduled for November. This marks the 19th year of the award, sponsored by Newman's Own, the Fisher House Foundation, and Military Times. Since the program was launched, Newman's Own and Fisher House have contributed $1.9 million to 179 organizations for their innovative programs to improve quality of life in the military community. 5 organizations were awarded a combined total of $200,000 in a ceremony Friday at the Pentagon. I I'm just trying to get the list of... There's General Joe Dumford. Come on. Those receiving awards of 37,500 are Code Platoon, Chicago, Illinois, provides software coding training to help local veterans and military spouses pursue careers as professional software developing. West Virginia Health Right, Incorporated from Charleston, West Virginia, provides free dental care to low-income West Virginia veterans without dental coverage. Healing Warriors Program of Boulder, Colorado, nonprofit clinic that provides non-narcotic integrative care therapies to treat pain symptoms of post-traumatic stress in veterans. Vets on Track Foundation of Garrisonville, Virginia, furnishes homes for veterans who have been placed into permanent housing after living on the streets or in shelter. This Fresh Start program volunteers turn houses into warm, loving homes with everything from sofas, beds, dining room tables, chairs, dishes, and silverware to pictures, pillows, and blankets. So you can see all kinds of cool stuff going on in the veteran community. But, you know, what Ferguson is saying is along the lines of post-traumatic winning. We don't need to be fixed. But you know what? I would qualify that. The vast majority of veterans don't need to be fixed. Some do. Okay? And what needs to be fixed is not, for the most part, what happened to them when they deployed in combat. Is that there was and continues to be infrastructure issues in that human being based on traumatic events. In their life. And so there is a percentage that are damaged and need help. And we have to recognize that as veterans. Okay. But in doing so, what we say is, but for the rest of us, okay, but for the rest of us, right, we need to be trained about what happened to us, how we're marginally different, and we need to be trained how to cope with that. We need to be educated about triggers and how to off ramp when those triggers start to get activated, how to deal with that, and then go live the life that you want to live. And because of the training you have, when you cross paths with other people, they're affected by trauma. Guess what you get to do? Be the Grinch. No, not the stealing Christmas part, you dumbass. Right? The make it all.
First of all, congratulations to James Ferguson and on the recognition and also the money award. I know it'll make his second job a little bit easier, so congratulations to them. But just exciting stuff. Top five stories in early bird. We'll do those real quickly. One, Pentagon identifies U.S. soldier killed in Afghanistan. In a movement, one vehicle hit an IED. Soldier got out of his vehicle to go help. One of the things you learn in Afghanistan and Iraq, where there's one, there's normally more. Somebody's going to hit one. They know people are going to get out. People are going to move, blah, 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 blah. That soldier was stepped on an IED, and his remains were brought back to the United States over the weekend. He's been identified as Sergeant James Slate, 23 years old, died in Helmand Province from wounds sustained in from an improvised explosive device. Slate from Morehead City in North Carolina was assigned to the 430th Explosive Ordnance Company of the North Carolina National Guard. He was posthumously promoted to the rank of sergeant. So obviously our thoughts and prayers are with his family. Number two, lawmaker, it's time to end the war in Afghanistan. Representative Ruben Gallego, right, He's a Marine Corps veteran, served in Iraq, has been a vocal critic of the perpetual war in recent years. In a statement this weekend, he said the military and political leaders need to find a way to put a stop to America's longest fight. So maybe we'll get him on. Pentagon denies report that Trump may fire the Air Force Secretary, which this story went around last week. Quote, this is nonsense. Pentagon report swats down, or the Pentagon swats down the report that Trump may fire the Air Force Secretary. Yeah. Supposedly a story confirmed by three sources. Quote, this is nonsense, Dana White said in a statement on Friday. The Department of Defense leadership team is focused on defending our great nation and working together to be worthy of the blood, treasure, and faith entrusted to us by the American people. So, there you have that. Number four, Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps retires after 39 years. General Glenn Walters retired last Thursday. He is slated to become the 20th president of the Citadel, where he is an alumnus. And he's going to be replaced by General Gary Thomas, former commander of the 2nd Marine Air Wing, currently the deputy commandant for programs and resources. Thomas picked up his 4th star at a promotion ceremony on Tuesday. So, we'll see if we can get either one of those guys on. And then the final story in the top five, has safety improved a year after the Navy and Marine Corps aviation crisis? The Marine Corps says they've cut their incident rate by 50%, Navy not so much. So, are they trending better? Yes. But as Daryl Nellis said, look, it took us years to get here. It's going to take us years to get out. But America's aviation component, at least in the Department of the Navy, much better than it was 12 months ago. Interesting stuff. I talked about Japan earlier, about China earlier. Japan military joins historic Philippine war games. Japanese troops stormed a beach in the Philippines on Saturday in joint exercises with U.S. and Filipino troops that officials said marked the first time Tokyo's armored vehicles rolled on a foreign soil since World War II. Now, again, that's not a small thing, and I'll tell you why. The Koreans just begged off of an event because the Japanese Navy was flying the Rising Sun flag. So that's how sensitive, right, almost 80 years later, that we are, or that the world still is, to the Japanese and what happened during World War II. So, interesting. All right, we'll take a break. Bob Nielsen's going to join us. You'll hear from him momentarily. The most beloved man from All Marine Radio. So don't touch that dial. We're going to talk to him about Vietnam a little bit, and he doesn't know it, but we'll talk about post-traumatic winning as well. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute, heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.